We are getting ready to talk with Michael Stitsworth. It's the Wednesday morning show, and that is when we talk about local food on Northern Community Radio. And I asked Michael to be here because I noticed a change in the meat department at my local grocery store. Local meat seems more available, and it's packaged differently. And when I looked more closely, the source of that was Stitsworth Meats in Bemidji. So, Michael, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you.
Your family has been in the business for over 25 years. Tell us about that history.
I think it basically started out a lot farther back than the 25 years. I had a great grandpa that kind of was in the business. He was down in Iowa and moved up to northern Minnesota. And my grandpa was a professor here, but my dad always kind of liked, it would have been his grandpa. He always got into the meat profession and started out doing that right out of, well, in high school. But he took sole ownership of his meat market back in 93. And I actually remember starting the same day. I was 13 years old and helping customers and cleaning up and helping doing wild game processing and stuff like that. I've kind of been around it my whole life. And, my passion was engineering. So I was in the Air Force. A lot of the Air Force was to get my education paid for, and ended up with two engineering degrees by the time I was done with the Air Force and schooling and everything else. And I realized, I didn't really think that being a butcher was a bad job. After I did a few things, I thought, I really didn't mind doing that. And there's so many variables to it. There's so many different ways you can do things. I think that keeps you out of the monotony of things. So you can change your career within the same career over and over and over again. And that's what I like about it.
Yeah, you told us before you went on the air that there are no places that train people to be butchers now. And so engineering, that's probably just as good as anything for training to do.
Yeah, it's a good general. Engineering professions kind of help you with your thought processes more than anything. So the way you look at things and the way you find opportunity within any business you're in, it doesn't really matter which one you're in. It helps you with a systematic thought process and finding better ways of doing things all the time. The best training I ever had was when I was working for Bobcat Company as an engineer. I got to learn from the guy that invented the Toyota production system. His name is Oba. We did a project that saved the company $26 million, and we figured it out in about a week. I learned probably more in that week than I did my whole life. And basically, it was training the way you look at things, how you get through a thought process and efficiencies and reducing waste and stuff like that.
So you brought this kind of thinking with you when you took over the business, you and your wife.
Yep.
And that was
it was 9 years ago yesterday.
Wow. Yep. Happy anniversary.
Yeah. Thanks. Yep. 9 years ago yesterday, I moved from North Dakota back to Bemidji to take over the family business. So yeah. And lots changed.
You've expanded that business.
I bought it in the original location in Nymore over off of 4th Street. And that building was around for a lot of years. We took it over in 93, but it was first opened in 1889, I think. You always hear the adage, location, location, location. So I just started reading about reading about traffic studies and this, that, and other thing. And I rented a building on Paul Bunyan Drive to see if that's actually true. And it is true. You got to have traffic, and it gives you more impressions, the people that actually see your building. Then Nymore actually had a big storm. We had them both open for a little bit, but Nymore had a big storm. And the repairs just weren't worth the money on what you'd get back out of them, because a lot of the stuff was grandfathered in because of the age of the building. We decided to just close it and sell it for, a cheap price. Somebody repurposed it into a rental property, and it actually had some really cool old maple hardwood floors underneath the flooring. And I think, they bought it really cheap, but, you obviously can't sell a building with a roof with roof damage for too much money. So anyway, we consolidated down in one location, and that one location really wasn't big enough to do everything we needed to do before when we had the two locations. So when the neighbor moved, we bought their building, and we went from renting to buying that building. And doubled the square footage there. And that what that really did is gave us even a bigger test lab on seeing what works and seeing what customers actually want. That's basically what drives any kind of business is what does your customer want? You know, it doesn't matter what the business owner wants.
The reason I emailed your business was because I went to Teal's Market yep. in Cass Lake, and I was looking at the meat and it all looked different. You know, yeah. It was all in different packaging. It came from Stitsworth's. Mm-hmm. What's going on?
Teal's is, like almost every grocery store in the nation now, there's a labor shortage in the meat industry. Right now, you know, Teal's is kind of seeing that's what's coming in their future. They asked if we would, you know, through our new facility, would cut for their meat department and package it. The packaging machine we bought to do all of our own stuff, we can do fresh meat through there. And then we found a new type of plastic that has like a UV coating on it. It's only made by one person in the world. Basically, it can hold fresh meat fresh for 28 days. So that basically gives them four times the amount of time to sell it. So you're reducing a ton of waste there. You know, grocery stores aren't throwing out as much as they used to. The packaging is a lot better than what you typically would see in a grocery store with that foam tray and the cellophane wrap, because there's still oxygen in there. And it just turns in like 4 days, you know, you have about 4 days to sell it. Then that forces them into doing something else with it, or customers not getting as good of a product, you know, just in case things don't turn as much. So we basically are cutting for their meat department. They're just transferring the labor to us. I'd say not all of it's coming from our on-the-farm operations, because obviously some cuts sell at a higher frequency than others. You know, if you went to the fastest moving item in the meat case, then you have a huge buildup of trim. So then you have a whole bunch of waste that way. So you kind of have to go, to what your slowest mover is, and then you fill in the gap from a outside source until you figure out a way to balance everything. So
what you're mentioning in explaining this is a couple of ways that you've expanded the business that we haven't even talked about yet.
Right.
And one is your processing plant, and one is your mobile unit.
Yep.
Tell us about those.
The mobile unit is a trailer that has everything on board to be USDA certified and inspected. We bring an inspector with us on the farm. The way I kind of look at it is, you have all the current regulation with USDA. It's centered around making food wholesome, you know, and safe to eat. Some of it's a little more, you know, overburden on regulation, makes it hard to comply with. But with this trailer, it has all the requirements, so we can comply with all the regulation and do it at the farm. So that animal's never been on a trailer in its life. It's kind of like, growing up, you always hear people talk about, oh, we raise our own, blah, blah, blah. And a lot of the stuff you can look at, and it looks apples to apples. Like, say you take a New York strip steak and the marbling and everything, it looks the same as if you bought it from a packing plant or if you got it straight off the farm. But what's different in it is the lactic acid buildup from the adrenaline. What that does is makes the muscle more tense. So it can look apples to apples, but be twice as tender.
That is fascinating.
So
I didn't have. That, I would never have.
You know,
of that.
I've always heard it, you know, but I've never really got to have a side by side comparison that, you know, over and over again to actually see it and taste it with, you know, myself and the quality difference. And then the other thing too is when you're doing things in a processing plant, you're taking thousands of cattle and running them through one location. So if we were to have a kill floor in our plant, we'd have to capture all this waste because it's too much waste for one single point to accept. You have to treat it, and there's a huge cost to that. It becomes an environmental hazard. But if you do it on the farm, you're doing a few here and there, different farms, you basically take what used to be waste and turn it into nutrients, because what they do is that, you know, when they clean out their barns and everything else, they have a manure pile, and that manure pile they then spread on their fields for fertilizer. With this waste from the trailer, it's not as a big a amount as like you do in one single location. So they put the waste in the manure pile. It breaks down into, you know, within a couple days. All the waste breaks down in the manure pile, and then that gets spread out on the fields for fertilizer.
What are farmers thinking about this?
They like it because if they haul their cattle to a processing facility, the closest one, you know, for us up here is probably going to be about 500 miles. Cattle going about 500 miles in a trailer are going to lose about 10% of their body weight. They're losing up to about 150 pounds in that trailer ride. So that's 150 pounds of weight that they lose. Just for simple math, you know, that's, say, $2 a pound on the weight at the processing facility. So there's $300. But then every load they ship, that's probably 30 cattle. And that costs them about $3,600 for 30 cattle. Plus they're losing about close to 150 pounds per cow. Mm-hmm. So
that's a lot of money.
There's a huge savings on not having to ship it. And for us, if we get to buy it at market value, we're getting to cut out our middlemen as well. It goes back to that Oba from Toyota. He just figure out ways to reduce waste. So basically you're reducing waste by what he means is taking steps out of the process that aren't needed. That's reducing waste is what he says. And if you just think about it that way, it kind of reduces actual waste in the end.
How many farmers are you working, or ranchers are you working with?
Right now, probably about five or six. Mm-hmm. We're going to a different one that we haven't been to here pretty soon. Typically, in the last 6 months, we've been focusing on what they call fat cattle, which is, you know, under 30 months old, you know, grain fed. It's a high-end cut. That's typically what you'd see at restaurants and meat markets like myself. You always hear about grass-fed and this, that, and other thing. And grass-fed is what we're going to next, maybe next week. We're going to go to that and try that out. The reason why we're going to try that avenue out is because when you have the fat cattle, you have a buildup of waste because of the, you know, the fat. You have to be able to consume the fat at about the same rate as your lean meats. If you find a balance to get around 85% lean ground beef, it's hard to do with fat cattle because you have more fat, so you're continually building more fat into the freezer because if you throw it away, it's just a complete loss. So we're going to go with some grass-fed next week, and that's going to feed our operations in like the sausage making and the snack sticks and jerkies, and then we supply almost all the locally owned restaurants. The corporate-owned ones have contracts with a big food wholesaler, you know, but locally-owned and operated ones will be using a lot of that lean meat and then basically your steak trim from trimming up your higher-end steaks will go into that to balance out your lean content.
So you have this new processing plant and you have this mobile slaughter unit.
Yep.
How many jobs have you added? How many people are working for you now?
In total, I think about 25. 9 years ago yesterday, it was me, and then my dad was out. I bought my dad out 100% right away, but he stuck around and helped me with the business for a couple years, part-time. So I had me, one full-timer, and two part-timers when I started.
Oh, really,
so this business has grown a lot. Where are your next markets going to be, and where do you think?
The thing you mentioned with Teals is a pretty big opportunity because it's kind of a growing epidemic. There's not enough skilled labor force in the meat industry anymore. My dad went to school for meat cutting, and that was the last school that they had. And I think that school closed in the 90s. Now that class is getting close to retirement age. So then you have the next class, which would have been the people that learned OJT off of those guys, which would be, you know, my age. I'm 39. You know, luckily I got to grow up working with my dad that had formal training, but a lot of these guys are just learning through tribal knowledge, the meat business.
Kind of an apprenticeship.
It's apprenticeship. But then you have apprentice teaching more apprentice. You never have the journeyman or the master type of situation. What happens in these grocery stores is you have to be very knowledgeable. There's many different things you can do with the same cut. If you don't market it well, or you're not efficient, you could go from, like, say, just for simple math, you say you try to make 30% average in a meat department in a supermarket, right? Well, a couple mistakes could take that from 30% down to losing money. You know, they solely depend on, you know, the knowledge of the guy running the meat department and the help that's with him. With this project that we're working on, where we're cutting in a central location, we're taking on that responsibility. That falls on us on how efficient we are. But we only have one location to manage instead of, you know, many, many grocery stores. So we run everything through one central point, and then we package it in that special plastic that gives them the extra shelf life. Then when they get the meat in, they can just mark it up 25%, and they know they're going to make 25% because they're not handling it again. It makes their business a lot more predictable. That's one of the major markets that we're working on, and it seems like it's happening, you know, more and more.
We are talking with Michael Stitzworth from Stitzworth Meats. Are you getting any reactions from customers? What are you hearing from the public as all these changes are taking place in your business?
Oh, pretty much all good. You haven't heard anybody complain about anything. When we started the new place, obviously our more experienced staff that we had at the store in town, we had to take up north, and it took a little bit for the, you know, some of the newer staff in town at the retail store to catch up with everything and get up to speed, you know, so we kind of had to pop down there and kind of help them get up to speed and make sure that they're treating our customers that we've always had right. And that's about the only negative effect I could see out of everything is making sure that that our retail outlet is still performing at a high level.
I notice on your Facebook page, which is very active, that you are constantly putting things in the smokehouse.
Yeah.
Yep. What do you got going in there this week?
Well, see, the smokers, we have two in town, and they're the same brand as what we have up north. We run them 24/7. So, you know, we started out with, we did 300 pounds of brisket for a big wedding. And then we did a bunch of smoked ribs. We bring them up to just before they fall apart, you know, and then we cool them off. So basically all you have to do is take them home and heat them up, and they taste like you just smoked them. And then we go through tons of smoked salmon. We do a sweeter than sweet smoked salmon, it's called. I shouldn't even call it sweeter than sweet because it's not sweet tasting. Basically what that means, it's not a salt-based cure. Typically, everybody has an idea of smoked salmon, and even myself, I never really liked it growing up, but we figured out a way to make it without near the, you know, that fake liquid smoke taste and the really salty, dry texture. It's very moist. It's a regular, you know, just natural wood smoke, and it's not a salt-based cure. That is popular. We could fill up our smokers every other day of that and not have enough. We have 6 distribution companies now taking our smoke stuff from up north, and our coverage is, you know, and I'm not saying it's like everywhere in these states. It's just we're in, it kind of gets less dense the farther away from Bemidji as you get, but we're in about 7 states now, and the distribution companies, they'll come to our dock and pick it up because we found distribution companies already coming through Bemidji, so they come through and pick it up and haul it back to their warehouse and then distribute it to stores that they already go to. You know, we're making our homemade brats and jerkies and sticks. And we're making all the beef products for the whole school district, all 10 schools in Bemidji. So they're getting stuff locally now, first time ever in the U.S. We're providing beef to Bagley and Kellier and North Home and Cass Lake.
We're doing school lunch programs?
Yeah, so all the patties, burger patties that they were getting previously were beef and soy. It wasn't all beef, and there's a huge ingredient list on that. You know, some of it, well, I remember seeing one ingredient, it was copper something, and that's what the kids were getting. Through us, it's just one ingredient, it's just ground beef in there, so. And we had to figure out how to pre-cook those because the schools don't have time to cook a bunch of burger patties. So what we did, and it adds flavor without having to add a bunch of extra ingredients, we let the schools add on what they want to do for seasoning, but we put it in our smoker. we smoke them up to temp to kill the bacteria. Then we cool them down and box them up. And then the smoke flavor gives them a flavor. And then they can add, you know, a little bit of seasoning to it after that when they warm it up.
Well, this is a remarkable story how you have expanded the Stitsworth business. And it's been really, I wish we had another, you know, 10 minutes.
I know it. What's your favorite cut? You take a steak home.
Probably a ribeye.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's Michael Stitsworth from Stitsworth Meats in Bemidji. They have a Facebook page and a website at stitsworthmeats.com. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you're listening to the Wednesday Morning Show, connecting you to local entrepreneurs behind the local food we see in our grocery stores and our schools and markets.